Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about a federal investigation of an online research journal. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about some American English expressions using the word stumped. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will tell you about life in the United States during the 1960s, a time of many changes. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
College professors and students spend years researching subjects, hoping to share their information with others and push knowledge forward. Once they complete their research, they publish this information. Researchers usually seek out academic journals to publish their findings or present them at conferences. A company called OMICS International is an online publisher of academic journals. Its website says OMICS International operates more than 700 journals with help from over 50,000 experts. It says that OMICS organizes thousands of conferences around the world each year. Yet, it is not clear on the site that the U.S. Federal Trade Commission is taking legal action against OMICS. In August 2016, the FTC accused the publishing company of unlawful business activities. First, an FTC statement claimed the company lied to researchers about publishing costs. The government claimed OMICS let researchers submit their papers for free, then later demanded money. The FTC also claims the company has refused to remove papers from the website unless researchers paid. This prevented the researchers from publishing their findings in other journals. Additionally, the FTC claims OMICS falsely listed the names of guest speakers at its conferences. This, the FTC says, was in hope of getting other people to willingly pay the fee of $1,000 or more to attend. Srinubabu Gadila says he created OMICS in 2000 with the hope of freely sharing scientific knowledge with the world. OMICS International says it follows the open access model of publishing. This means anyone can read its publications free of charge. Gadila says FTC officials cannot charge him with anything unlawful because they mistakenly have him on record as a permanent U.S. resident. Gadila says he is a resident of India. He also argues the government is taking action in an attempt to stop the success of open access publishing. All the FTC accusations have done is a matter of making accusations without any valid documentary evidence, just to kill the open access publishing, he says. Further, I understand that the FTC is working towards favoring some subscription-based journal publishers who are earning billions of dollars from scientists' literature. The traditional model of publishing academic journals is known as the subscription model. In this model, publishers cover costs and can also make a profit by charging a monthly or yearly fee. That way, researchers can offer their work free of charge. Also, a university library paying the fee then has use of the information in the journals. Jeffrey Beale says he has heard the argument of subscription-based publishers trying to kill open access publishers before. Yet he does not believe it. Beale is an academic librarian at the University of Colorado in Denver. He has 26 years of experience in his field. Beale says there are many problems with journals like those OMICS publishes. He thinks the subscription model is better at identifying questionable journals and dealing with them in the best way possible.
If a journal performed poorly, publishing low-quality articles, or if it had other types of problems, libraries would cancel their subscriptions because they didn't want to pay for a low-quality journal. So eventually, enough libraries would cancel their subscriptions and the journal would go out of business.
But what exactly makes a journal low-quality? For one thing, Beale says, low-quality journals abuse the needs of professors to publish. The more a researcher publishes, the more likely he or she will find a job with a college or university. Low-quality journals promise to publish if researchers are willing to pay, Beale says. And that is part of an even bigger problem. Beale notes the most important part of publishing research is the peer review process. This is when experts in the same field, often having never met the researcher, examine the research for mistakes. This ensures the research is not only understandable, but also completely real, he says. But Beale argues low-quality journals are only interested in money from submission fees. To keep researchers submitting papers, these publishers often avoid the peer review process. Or they choose experts without the necessary knowledge, he says. And they also lie about how many other academics read their journals. It is not always easy to tell which journals are legitimate, following accepted rules, and which are not. So, in 2011, Beale created an online list of journals and other academic groups he calls predatory. The list was discontinued in early 2017. He admits his decisions to list a journal are based on his subjective opinion. But Beal says he uses many different ways to rate these journals. Often they offer a quick peer review process, which he says is impossible. Another sign is a large number of spelling or grammar mistakes on a journal's website. This can make it harder for researchers whose first language is not English to identify predatory journals, Beal says. Professor Peter Dreyer notes that even legitimate journals and conferences have their problems. Dreyer teaches politics at Occidental College in Los Angeles, California. He says academic writing has become so complex that sometimes even fellow experts cannot understand it. This sometimes leads to peer reviewers approving submissions they otherwise would not simply because the writing appears scientific. To prove this, Dreyer submitted a paper to a conference of the Society for Social Studies of Science held in 2010. Dreyer says the submission he wrote was complete nonsense, and the conference accepted it. Dreyer warns of two major dangers. He says it is the duty of researchers to increase knowledge in the world. But if they write in a way only other researchers understand, that knowledge will only help the highly educated. Also, if journals knowingly publish bad research because they seek profit, the value of knowledge decreases. Dreyer uses fake news as an example. He says in the past, people trusted the established news media. But as more fake news is published, people stop believing things they see or hear in the news. And people must understand that some things are real and some are not, he says.
The very idea of expertise is in question. If people don't trust that there are people that are willing to tell the truth about what's happening in the world, not just politicians, but scientists, if they don't trust them, because their ideas have been undermined by the pursuit of profit, then it's very difficult for society to move forward and make progress.
I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Anna Mateo.
And now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. Every word has its own story. What does it mean? Where did it come from? And how did it get into our language? There are many stories of early settlers of America, the people who moved westward and opened up new territory. Many of these settlers were farmers who wanted a new home, a piece of land, some crops, and cattle. So they moved west, cutting their way through difficult terrain, searching for a good place to live and farm. When they found it, they took out their axes and cut down trees. This was hard work. One of the hardest tasks was pulling up tree stumps from the ground. And that's our word today, stump, a tree stump. Is the part of a tree that remains in the ground after the tree is cut down. Stumps can also be the part of something, such as a pencil, that remains after the rest has been worn away. Tree stumps gave these early American farmers big problems. Some stumps were so big that farmers had to use two or three horses to pull them out. Stumps became part of life and part of the language. If someone asked a settler if they had cleared the land, they might answer, "Nope, I'm still stumped." This means they did not know how to get rid of the tree stumps from the ground. And today, this meaning of the word is the same. To be stumped is to not know what to do or say. You are confused. You are blocked. And that is the end of Words and Their Stories. If this story has left you feeling stumped, write us a comment. We will help you figure it out.
Now we present The Making of a Nation. Today, Steve Ember tells the story of the United States in the 1960s.
The 1960s began with the election of the first president born in the 20th century, John Kennedy. For many Americans, the young president represented a spirit of hope for the nation. When Kennedy was murdered in 1963, many felt that their hopes died too. This was especially true of young people and members and supporters of minority groups. A time of innocence and hope soon began to look like a time of anger and violence. Many Americans protested to demand an end to the unfair treatment of black citizens. Many more protested to demand an end to the war in Vietnam. And many protested to demand full equality for women. By the middle of the 1960s, it had become almost impossible for President Lyndon Johnson to leave the White House without facing protesters against the war in Vietnam. In March of 1968, Johnson announced that he would not seek another term in office. In addition to President Kennedy, two other influential Americans were murdered during the 1960s. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot in Memphis, Tennessee, in 1968. Several weeks later, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, was shot in Los Angeles, California. He was campaigning to win his party's nomination for president. The two murders resulted in riots in cities across the country. The unrest and violence affected many young Americans. The effect seemed especially bad because of the time in which they had grown up. By the middle 1950s, most of their parents had jobs that paid well. They expressed satisfaction with their lives. They taught their children what were called middle-class values. These included a belief in God, hard work, and service to their country. Later, many young Americans began to question these beliefs. They felt that their parents' values were not enough to help them deal with the social and racial difficulties of the 1960s. They rebelled by letting their hair grow long and by wearing unusual clothing. Their dissatisfaction was strongly expressed in music. Rock and roll music had become very popular in America in the 1950s. Some people, however, did not approve of it. They thought it was too sexual. These people disliked the rock and roll of the 1960s even more. They found the words especially unpleasant. The musicians themselves thought the words were extremely important. As singer and songwriter Bob Dylan said, "There would be no music without the words." Bob Dylan produced many songs of social protest. He wrote anti-war songs before the war in Vietnam became a violent issue in the United States. One was called "Blowin' in the Wind."
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man. How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
In addition to songs of social protest, rock and roll music continued to be popular in America during the 1960s. The most popular group, however, was not American, it was British, the Beatles, four rock and roll musicians from Liverpool. The Beatles' song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, went on sale in the United States at the end of 1963. Within 5 weeks, it was the biggest selling record in the country. Other songs, including some by the Beatles, sounded more revolutionary. They spoke about drugs and sex, although not always openly.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
In the 1960s, do your own thing became a common expression. It meant to do whatever you wanted without feeling guilty. 500,000 young Americans did their own thing at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. They gathered at a farm in New York State. They listened to musicians such as Jimi Hendrix and Joan Baez, and to groups like The Who and Jefferson Airplane.
Look what's happening on the street. Got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, I'm dancing down the street. Got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, little breezy on the people I meet.
Got a revolution.
Woodstock became a symbol of the young people's rebellion against traditional values.
This generation got new generation.
Many young people called themselves hippies. Hippies believed there should be more love and personal freedom in America. In 1967, poet Allen Ginsberg helped lead a gathering of hippies in San Francisco. No one knows exactly how many people considered themselves hippies, but 20,000 attended the gathering. Another leader of the event was Timothy Leary.
Now, energy comes.
He was a former university professor and researcher. Leary urged the crowd in San Francisco to tune in and drop out. This meant they should use drugs and leave school or their job. One drug that was used in the 1960s was lysergic acid diethyl amide, or LSD. LSD causes the brain to see strange, colorful images. It can also cause brain damage.
Listen, the sky with diamonds.
Some people say the Beatles' song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was about LSD.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not
get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
As many Americans were listening to songs about drugs and sex, many others were watching television programs with traditional family values. These included The Andy Griffith Show and The Beverly Hillbillies. At the movies, some films captured the rebellious spirit of the times. These included The Graduate and Dr. Strangelove.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack. And so, because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying. Yes, it's simple to understand and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines.
Gold finger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch.
Other films offered escape through spy adventures like the James Bond films. Many Americans refused to tune in and drop out in the 1960s. They took no part in the social revolution. Instead, they continued leading normal lives of work, family, and home. Others, the activists of American society, were busy fighting for peace and racial and social justice.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
Women's groups, for example, were seeking equality with men. They wanted the same chances as men to get a good education and a good job. They also demanded equal pay for equal work. A widely popular book on women in modern America was called The Feminine Mystique. It was written by Betty Friedan and published in 1963. The idea known as the feminine mystique was the traditional idea that women have only one part to play in society. They are to have children and stay at home to raise them. In her book, Ms. Friedan urged women to establish professional lives of their own. In the early 1960s, a committee was appointed to investigate the condition of women. It was led by Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a former First Lady. The committee's findings helped lead to new rules and laws. The 1964 Civil Rights Act guaranteed equal treatment for all groups. This included women. After the law went into effect, however, many activists said it was not being enforced. The National Organization for Women, NOW, was started in an effort to correct the problem. The movement for women's equality was known as the Women's Liberation Movement. Activists were called women's libbers. They called each other sisters. Early activists were usually rich, liberal, white women. Later activists included women of all ages, women of color, rich and poor, educated and uneducated. They acted together to win recognition for the work done by all women in America.
This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul, Steve Ember, and Geraldine Watson. It was presented and produced by Steve Ember, and we thank them all. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.